Charles a while ago said, well, I guess people knew you were coming because the numbers are down. And it's always good to have real encouragement like that from time from time to time. I imagine the time change probably messed up some of us in losing an hour last night. But you're here, and I'm grateful for it. And I want to share a thought with you that has been an encouraging thought for me over the years. And I try to share it with brethren whenever I have this opportunity. And it's based on the fact that we are blessed with this privilege of coming to remember the Lord this morning. When you look back at the history of God and His relationship with His people, what you see is that He's always required His people to have a memorial feast. Let me try this. That He would either appoint something for them to do on a weekly basis or a monthly basis or several times a year, you would see that He would require them to gather to reflect on certain things. And I think we understand that mentality. I mean, even as a nation, we have things that we reflect on from time to time. That there are certain days we set aside to go back and think about the significance of an event or the significance of a day to our nation. And so these are good things. We have memorials set up to reflect back on what people have done for us and the sacrifices made for us even as a whole. And what I'd like for us to consider from time to time, and I think it's important for us as God's people to reflect on from time to time, is that today, on the first day of the week, as we gather with one another as the Lord's body, that we're engaging in a memorial that's not just another memorial, but rather it's the greatest memorial ever given mankind. It's a special memorial that's known as the Lord's Supper. And let me just tell you this right now. I know there's a lot of information in this, and you can have copies of these charts. That's fine. But hopefully because it's a broad subject, hopefully we can retain something from all that I'm about to share with us in this lesson. But the Lord's Supper is what we are gathering to take today, or the breaking of bread, as it's referred to in Acts 20 and verse 7. It's also referred to as communion in 1 Corinthians 10:16. It's the cup of the Lord, 1 Corinthians 10:21. It's the Lord's table, 1 Corinthians 10:21. And when you combine all of this, that's why I say I think this is the greatest memorial ever given mankind. It's what we're about to participate in an hour or so from now. That we're going to go back and reflect on what Jesus has done for us, and that is the most significant reflection man can ever engage in. It's the greatest memorial ever given mankind. And the reason I say that is because of the cost involved. It's the greatest cost for any remembrance. Now, it's not the price. I mean, these items themselves aren't very costly. The fruit of the vine and the unleavened bread, these are relatively cheap items, we might say. And they're common items. They're not hard to get hold of anywhere in the world, that anyone can find these things at any part of the earth. And so it's not anything that is difficult to come up with. And we know it's going to be the fruit of the vine and unleavened bread because that's the setting that Jesus was in when He instituted this memorial. That He and the fellow apostles or Jews were taking the Passover the night before He was arrested. And as they were gathering in Matthew 26:17 to eat the Passover, it was during that meal that as they were eating in verse 26, Jesus took bread. Well, they were about to engage in a whole week's period of unleavened bread. And so, you know, there was no leaven there. This was unleavened bread that He took, and He set this aside, and He engaged in this memorial. So it's not a very expensive item to come up with, the greatest cost of this memorial. But rather, it's the greatest cost in what it symbolizes and what Jesus had to endure so that you and I can have this opportunity. That He likened it to His body. He said in Matthew 26 and verse 26, as they were eating, Jesus took bread, blessed it, and broke it, and gave it to the disciples and said, "Take, eat, this is my body." Then he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you, for this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. Now, his body, obviously he hadn't died yet. The blood hadn't been spilled yet. And yet he said, this bread is my body, this fruit of the vine is my blood. And it's symbolically is what he's talking about. Obviously, there are people in our world who think that's literally the body, literally the blood of Christ, things like that. But that's not what Jesus is saying. That he took these items and said, this represents this. This represents my body. This represents my blood, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But that's why it's the greatest cost. No memorial has cost so much as what Jesus has done for us and given us this memorial. Because obviously the Son of God coming in and taking the body and sacrificing it to the Father in a perfect manner and in a painful manner. In fact, in Hebrews 2 and verse 9, we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, might taste death for everyone. Okay, so when we take this, we need to remember the fact somebody died to give us this. That when we take this, Jesus says, now I want you to think of my body, I want you to think of my blood. I gave up these things for you. I suffered intensely to give you this memorial. So we need to think about that when we engage in the Lord's Supper. That Jesus had to die to make that possible for us. And we need to reflect on what he went through, because it was a very painful death. And we need to always appreciate that. Even when you go back to the garden the night before he died, it says in Luke chapter 22 that as he was praying to the Father, even asking, if possible, let this cup pass from me. It says in Luke chapter 22 that as he is offering that prayer, that being in agony in verse 44, it says that he prayed more earnestly, then his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground. Now, can you imagine that, being in so much pain, or at least have so much pressure on you that you excrete blood? But that's what's happening here. Okay, he's praying, Father, like I said, if possible, let this cup pass. So he has all this burden on him. He has all this pressure on him. So that the blood begins to trickle down his forehead. That's intense pain. But see, that's what we need to remember. We need to remember what he went through, not only in that prayer and in preparing himself for this death, but the actual death itself. The agony that he endured in making this memorial available to us. And he was willing to go through some serious pain to do this for us. In Mark chapter 15, it talks about the fact that as he is arrested and as he is led away to be crucified, several things have happened to him. In Mark chapter 15, notice where it says that Pilate, wanting to gratify the crowd, released Barabbas to them, and he delivered Jesus after he had scourged him to be crucified. Then the soldiers led him away into the hall called Praetorium, and they called together the whole garrison, and they clothed him with purple. They twisted a crown of thorns, put it on his head, began to salute him, "Hail, King of the Jews." They struck him on the head with a reed and spat on him, and bowing the knee, they worshipped him. And when they had mocked him, they took the purple off him, put his own clothes on him, and led him out to crucify him. So you have a scene here where Jesus is being humiliated, okay? Oh yeah, this is the great king. Let's just bow down to this king. He's so worthy of our homage. And so they're mocking him. The creator, the one who has actually given these people breath, they're mocking him. And they're saluting him in this vain manner. But it says that they scourged him. Now, you know, you've read up on that. You know what was involved in that, the whipping. You know how they would tie a person's arms around some type of stone or, you know, something to where they would tighten the back. And then these people would just, they would whip the back, you know, with a whip that would either have bits of bone or metal on it. And these lacerations were huge. They were significant. And it wasn't just like limited to his back. You know, it's just whipping all over him, all across his back and across, I'm sure, the side of his face. And it's being done by soldiers. I remember driving one time and I was listening to the golf tournament, the Masters. And, you know, it's, you know, I attempt to play this from time to time, nothing. I mean, you won't see me on TV is what I'm saying, okay? There's just no way I'm going to make a career of this. But I'm listening to the Masters, and I'd never noticed this before, but listening to these professional players, and they would have, you know, they would have their tee shots, where you could hear the tee shots, and just the swing, just the wind, the whipping sound behind a professional. I'm not used to that. I'm not used to hearing it like that. I'm certainly not used to seeing it go that way, but to hear that whipping, that just that whipping sound of a professional golfer. And you look at this. I mean, these were soldiers. You could just, that whipping, that just that professional torturer having their way with Jesus. And just the intense pain that had to be part of this. And, you know, we read this that, oh, they scourged him. Oh, you know, they scourged him. No, that's huge right there. That would have been a deal breaker for me right there. I don't know if I could have got past that. But then you had the thorns that were ground into his skull, this bloody back that had this purple robe put on it, then ripped off, and then they go and crucify him. And it's just there, you read it like, oh yeah, well, he's scourged, he was crucified, so on and so forth. No, that's huge. That's major. That when you think about the crucifixion and the process behind it, I came across a pretty good description of what happened when a person was crucified. And if you would, bear with me. A medical doctor provides, okay, a physical description of this. The cross is placed on the ground and the exhausted man is quickly thrown backwards with his shoulders against the wood. Now keep in mind, Jesus' back is just opened up, okay? So they throw him against this wooden cross. The legionnaire feels for the depression at the front of the wrist. He drives a heavy, square, iron nail through the wrist deep into the wood. Quickly, he moves to the other side and repeats the action, being careful not to pull the arms too tightly, but to allow some flex and movement. The cross is then lifted into place. The left foot is pressed backward against the right foot, and with both feet extended, toes down, a nail is driven through the arch of each, leaving the knees flexed. The victim is now crucified. As he slowly sags down with more weight on the nails and the wrist, excruciating fiery pain shoots along the fingers and up the arms to explode in the brain. The nails and the wrist are putting pressure on the median nerves. As he pushes himself upward to avoid this stretching torment, he places the full weight on the nail through his feet. Again, he feels the searing agony of the nail tearing through the nerves between the bones of his feet. As the arms fatigue, cramps sweep through his muscles, knotting them in throbbing pain. With these cramps comes the inability to push himself upward to breathe. Air can be drawn into the lungs, but not exhaled. He fights to raise himself in order to get even one small breath. Finally, carbon dioxide builds up in the lungs and in the bloodstream, and the cramps partially subsided. Spasmodically, he is able to push himself upward to exhale and breathe again. Hours of limitless pain, cycles of twisting, joint-wrenching cramps, searing pain as tissue is torn from his lacerated back as he moves up and down against the rough timber. Then another agony begins. A deep, crushing pain deep in the chest as the pericardium slowly fills with serum and begins to compress the heart. It is now almost over. The loss of fluids has reached a critical level. The compressed heart is struggling to pump heavy, thick, sluggish blood into the tissues. The tortured lungs are making frantic effort to gasp in small gulps of air. He can feel the chill of death creeping through his tissues as he dies. Now, I have no doubt that's what Jesus went through, okay? Just the pain and the agony of being suspended through nails in your wrist and feet. That's what he went through. And so when we take this, Jesus says, I want you to take the unleavened bread And to think of my body that was given for you. Okay, so this pain that he went through of offering his body to pay for our sin and to pay for our redemption. And then, of course, the fruit of the vine to represent the significance of that blood and how we could not have redemption without it. So at least, hopefully, when we take the memorial, we understand that this is the greatest memorial because of the cost involved. Jesus had to endure great pain to bring us this memorial. I suggest to you another thought. What time do we end this on the clock? Well, okay. All right. What now? We'll get there. And if you have questions, we'll get to those at the end if we have time. That's okay. But then I suggest to you the greatest meaning involved in this memorial, because it is a covenant meal. God's had covenant meals with his people in times past, and that's what this is. It is a meal reflecting on this special relationship we have with God through Christ. And that's how Jesus defines it. That this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. And so it's a spiritual engagement that we have, and that's why it's called the Lord's Supper. Now, obviously, this is going to be separate from everything else we engage in throughout the week, because it's not something we eat to satisfy ourselves physically. That's not what this is about. It's something we do to reflect on things spiritually. So it's not our own meal, okay? It's the Lord's Supper. In fact, Paul, you know, when he had to correct the brethren at Corinth for all their mistakes and what they said was the Lord's Supper when they were coming together to take it, which was actually a common meal, he had to distinguish this. He let them know that when you come together in one place, it is not to eat the Lord's Supper. Now, they said they were. They thought they were coming together for the Lord's Supper. They professed to be doing that. But what they were actually doing was engaging in a potluck, or they were engaging in a physical meal. And he says, no, that's not the Lord's Supper. The Lord's Supper is not some common meal that you gather and share with one another. That's not what this is about. If you want to engage in those things, what do? You take those things home. That's not the work of the church. That's not the purpose of the church. Do you not have houses to eat and drink in, is what he said very plainly twice in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. So this is the Lord's Supper. Okay, it's a special covenant meal we have with the Lord, and that's why the Lord uses that term of communion, where we are actually sharing in this with Jesus. Now, obviously, he's not going to be here physically with us. That's not how he shares with us in this. But we rather commune with him, okay, that we partake of that body, we partake of the blood with him as we do this in a spiritual sense. The cup of the blessing which we bless, is it not the communion, okay? So there you go. You have that partaking, that sharing of the blood of Christ. The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? Well, to me, that simply means that when I take this, okay, I'm not just simply taking another item. Okay, this is a moment where I'm actually having fellowship with the Lord, thinking about what he has done to provide a sinner like me with the hope of redemption. And so we're sharing in this with the Lord, and it's the Lord's Supper. Okay, it's a spiritual meal, a covenant meal that we're engaged in. So it's the greatest memorial for those reasons. It's the greatest memorial because of the participants involved. It's not like the Lord said, okay, I want everybody to do this. Instead, what you see in the New Testament is that only Christians are the ones who have been asked by the Lord to come and share in this meal with him. That's what you have. I mean, even from the dawn of Christianity, the very first day of Christianity in Acts chapter 2, even as people were added to the Lord's body, you see that they were taught to take the Lord's Supper. That those who gladly received the word were baptized, Acts 2:41, 3,000 souls added that day. And they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine and fellowship, in the breaking of bread and in prayers. So you have the very, very first day, they're taking the Lord's Supper. And the day of Pentecost, of course, was on a Sunday. This was the first day of the week, so it was an appropriate time to reflect on the Lord's sacrifice, where you have disciples engaging in this, and it's done, of course, in the assembly. Sometimes people wonder, well, should I take this to my brethren who cannot get out? Okay, I've wrestled with that, even experienced that at times, where we would take the Lord's Supper to people who were bound to home or some other place where they could not get out. And I don't know if that's required. I don't know if that's what is required of us in doing this, because when you think about it, this is something that was done in the assembly. That's where at least it's practiced in the New Testament. It's in the assembly for those who have not taken the Lord's Supper, okay? They are to take this. When you come together to eat, wait for one another, 1 Corinthians 11:33. If anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, lest you come together for judgment. But you have this coming together to take this in the assembly. That's the safest answer we can come up with, or at least I can come up with, is that the Lord wants us to do this as His people in the assembly on the first day of the week. The point I want us to see here, of course, is that it's Christians that God wants to share in this meal with. And that is a tremendous honor, a tremendous blessing. That it's between Jesus and His saints. And that's what He said when He gave the Lord's Supper in Matthew 26. That He said, as He instituted it that night, which was a Thursday night, but He said that, I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. Now wait, well, Acts 2 we just saw, okay, people being added to the Lord's body, they're taking the Lord's Supper. Acts chapter 2, we just read that. And yet Jesus instituted it many days prior to that, at least 50 days prior to that, and He said, I'm not taking this again until in the kingdom. I'm not going to take this with you until in the kingdom. Well, obviously, if they're taking it on the day of Pentecost, the first day of Christianity, and they're doing it as the church, then obviously that's what He had in mind when He said taking it again in the kingdom. And that is just another way of reasoning with people who would say that the kingdom's not come yet. That we still need to wait for the Lord's kingdom to come, that He's going to come and establish some type of earthly kingdom. Well, one way to get them to see that's not the truth is the Lord's Supper. Because Jesus said, we're not taking this again until in the kingdom. And in Acts 2, they're taking it. 1 Corinthians 11, they're taking it. The New Testament, they're taking it. So obviously, if the church is not the kingdom, why take the Lord's Supper? It's something worth considering. But not just anybody can do this. And that's what I need to remember. It's a great privilege that God has called His people to come and share with this meal. I think it's the greatest memorial because of the effect it has on us. Now, if we don't do 4th of July, if we don't do Thanksgiving, if we don't reflect back on what happened to our nation to put us in this position, it does hurt us, okay? It does impair us as a nation to not look back on the sacrifices made, okay, and the blessings we have with freedom and the privileges and all that. So it's good. Memorials are good for us to think back on what people have done for us. But when we don't do the Lord's Supper, or at least when we don't take it properly, it is more than just impairing us, you know, from thinking of what Jesus has done for us, that there's actual sin involved. Okay, that's why this is the greatest memorial. Because if you don't do this right, it's a sin. All right, again, it's not like, oh, well, that's a shame. I wish they would get this right. No, we are offending our Maker and we're offending our Savior if we don't partake of this properly. And so that's why it's important that we understand this. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, there are several effects that it's supposed to have on us. And obviously, the nature of it is, number one, it's going to remind us of what Jesus has done for us. 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and I read for you in verse 24, when He had given thanks, He broke it and said, take, eat, this is my body which is broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me. Now, wait a minute. I see in our world where people say, well, December 25th, that's when we were going to think about Jesus and we're going to celebrate His birth. Or on Easter, we're going to celebrate His resurrection. Things that are completely foreign to the New Testament. And yet the very thing Jesus does tell us to do is outlined for us. And He says, do this. This is what I want. I don't want a birthday party. I don't want something once a year on Easter. I want this. You want to give me what I want? All right, do this in remembrance of me. That's from the Lord Himself. So how can we dispute that? How can we debate that? I want you to take that bread, and I want you to take that fruit of the vine. In the same manner, He also took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. This do, as often as you drink it, in remembrance of me. That's what He wants. So it's to remind us of what He's done for us, to demonstrate our faith in Him. Verse 26, 1 Corinthians 11. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till He comes. Now what's that mean? You proclaim the Lord's death till He comes. Well, you profess that this is not just cracker and juice. Okay? That this is symbolic of His death, and I believe in that death. And I believe in the importance of that death. And I believe He's coming back, which is why I take this. And so it is to demonstrate faith in Him as our Savior, Creator, the one who's coming back. And it says in verse 27 that we are to do some self-examination. Whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. Well, I wasn't there. Were you there? That song we sing, were you there when they crucified our Lord? No, I wasn't there. And yet it says right here that if I don't take this properly, it was as if I was there participating in His death because I don't appreciate what He has done for me. So I have to examine myself. It's not a time to think about what I'm going to have for lunch. It's not a time to think about what bills need to be paid. It's not a time to schedule my week, right? And when I take this, it's not like, well, got that done, checked it off, let's go on. No. He wants me to take this and to examine myself, thinking about how much I needed that bread and needed that fruit of the vine and the price paid to provide it to me. And so I examine myself. And it says in verse 29, he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. Again, you can't say that about 4th of July. Okay? You can't say that about Thanksgiving or Memorial Day. It's not going to be judgment on your soul if you don't get that one right. But this one is. If we don't take this properly, there is some judgment involved. And so that's why this is completely different than everything else. It says in verse 30, for this reason many are weak and sick among you, and many sleep. For if we would judge ourselves, we would not be judged. But when we are judged, we are chastened by the Lord, that we may not be condemned with the world. All right, so he's saying that because the Corinthians didn't get this right, okay, because they were coming together for a potluck, this is why you're dying spiritually as a church, he's saying. This is why you're decaying, is because you're not thinking about this. So what that tells me is, I need this. That there's something within this memorial that is essential for me getting to heaven and for me to walk closely with the Lord. And so there's something in this memorial that is pertinent to my development as a Christian. It's the greatest memorial because of the great neglect, I would say, that is going on. Of course, he says that we are to take this in a worthy manner. Whoever takes this in an unworthy manner will be guilty in the body and blood of the Lord. Now, sometimes we wonder, and brethren have prayed this, taking the Lord's Supper or even stating it, that I'm not worthy of this, is what they'll say. Okay, I'm not worthy of taking the Lord's Supper, and so I'm not going to take it. I don't deserve to take it. But that's not what he's telling us, right? He's telling us that when we do take it, that we're to take it in a worthy manner. Now, obviously, nobody is going to deserve this. Nobody's going to deserve this sacrifice. I don't. You don't. We don't deserve it. None of us is worthy of this. So that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about when we take it, we are to take it in a worthy manner, reflecting on the proper things that He intended for us to think about. So it's unworthy manner and not the unworthy person. And of course, because people got this wrong back then, they were dying spiritually. So it's a great neglect. Unfortunately, our world has watered this thing down to where you take it at weddings, you take it at funerals, you take it once a year, twice a year, for various reasons under different headings that the New Testament knows nothing about. And so that is a tremendous neglect, a great neglect. And yet we see that it is to be done for peculiar reasons in the New Testament. But then I'll say this, in talking about this memorial, and again, I think we will have time for questions if you have any questions about this, since this is a class. It's to be done on the first day of the week. I realize the Lord instituted it on a Thursday, but He said, I'm not taking this again until the kingdom. Okay, that's what He said. And then, of course, on the first day of the week is what we see saints doing. It says in Acts chapter 20 that Paul waited 7 days just for the first day of the week to take this with the saints there at Troas, Acts 20 and verse 7. Well, look at that language, okay? The first day of the week. That's key. Because as far as I can tell, every week's going to have a first day. And when you look at the Bible, when God wanted something done once a year, okay, He would state the month and the day. But when He wanted something done once a week, He would state the day of the week. Like, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. Well, which one? Well, remember the Sabbath day. You remember every Sabbath that comes along is what that language implies. And you see the very same thing being done in the New Testament, that they took this on the first day of the week. Well, if your company said that you will get paid on the first day of the week, will there be any dispute about when you get paid? I mean, would you say, well, you know, that could be once a year, it could be twice a year, it could be once in a while? No, you would know the language very well if you got paid on the first day of the week. If your mortgage is due on the first day of the week, or any bill, first day of the week, whatever, you would know what that language means. And so here God is showing us that every week He wants us to stop and think about this. That He wants us to come together as His people to lift each other up in worship and to edify each other, but to think on this thing. That He wants us to engage in this memorial. Now, another good example of this is Paul himself, where he says in 1 Corinthians 11, going back to that grand text, where he says in verse 23, I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you, that the Lord Jesus, on the same night in which He was betrayed, took bread. Now, was Paul in that upper room with the apostles when Jesus instituted it? Wasn't even anywhere on the radar in serving Christ, right? He was still very zealous as a Pharisee. So he wasn't there in that room. And yet he says in this very verse, I received from the Lord that which I also delivered to you. That when Jesus was betrayed, the night he took this and instituted it. And so what Paul is saying is, I've received this to teach to you. So to me, that makes a grand impression, because this is something that Jesus wants every Christian to think about and engage in. It wasn't just the apostles. It's everybody who's going to serve the Lord. And He inspired Paul to correct Corinthians, who had a misunderstanding about how to take this special feast. But once again, this is what Jesus wants us to do in remembering Him. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until He comes. And so we take it on the first day of the week. And if you think about it, that's why Sunday is the traditional day of worship in Christianity. And so for churches to take away the Lord's Supper and to no longer have it as part of their weekly observance, it makes you wonder, why do they even assemble? I mean, because why did the saints first assemble in the New Testament? To do this. That wasn't the only thing they did, but this was the primary reason why, to come together on the first day of the week. So if you take this away, why still assemble? Why come together? And then, of course, people just don't realize what they're engaging in taking away that which Jesus instituted. But Paul said, look, I received it from him, and I'm telling it to you that this is what Jesus wants us to think about every first day of the week. And so I share these thoughts with you, good friends. I know that's a lot of ground to cover. Like I said, I know that's a lot of information, but hopefully something was, you know, helped us. Something was triggered in our heart that when we take this morning, that we're actually going to think about some specific things that Jesus wants us to think about as we engage in this memorial. Now, we have a few minutes. It's a class, so any questions, comments? All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Well, just nudge the person next to you, wake them up, tell them class is over. So, any questions? We got it all? All right, friends.